Are you looking for a new basketball shoe? If so, this is Gary Parrish here to tell you that the New Balance 2-Way V4 features the groundbreaking use of fuel cell technology with fresh foam, creating the ultimate combination of rebound and cushioning. Every step feels explosive and dynamic, and the upper construction features a lightweight textile that's supportive and breathable. So whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the 2-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the 2-Way at newbalance.com.
Ready to start talking to your kids about financial literacy? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app that teaches kids and teens how to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest with your guardrails in place. Parents can send instant money transfers, automate allowance, and more. Plus, keep an eye on spending with real-time notifications. Join more than 6 million families building healthy financial habits together on Greenlight. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey. That's greenlight.com/odyssey.
Hey there, I'm Gary Parrish. Welcome back to the CBS Sports Eye on College Basketball podcast, where we sometimes discuss camel fighting, dodo birds, and leaky black. Matt Norlander is here with me. If you're watching on YouTube, smash that like button like you're Brandon Davies. You have consent. If you haven't yet, yeah, subscribe to the YouTube channel. Please knock that out while you're here. Dead leg. Fun weekend of college basketball. The biggest game on the schedule. It was a neutral court showdown between Kentucky and Gonzaga. The final score, Zags 88, Wildcats 72. So Gonzaga now 3-1 with wins over Kentucky and Michigan State. Lone loss at Texas. Meantime, Kentucky's 3-2 with no notable wins and losses to Michigan State and Gonzaga. John Calipari's Wildcats have now taken a second loss in the month of November for just the second time in the past 10 years. Norlander, I believe the YouTube tease on our previous episode was, quote, "Is it time to worry about Gonzaga?" Before I ask you if it's time to worry about Kentucky, Let me ask you about your main takeaways from Gonzaga's blowout of UK.
Yeah, obviously an impressive showing by Gonzaga. And on the previous or last week's episode, when we were talking about what Texas was able to do to Gonzaga, I resisted any kind of grander, broad takeaways because I just wanted to see how Gonzaga would respond to an ass kicking. And they got their ass thoroughly kicked against Texas and came back, win by 16 points at Spokane Arena. And it wasn't as authoritative as what Texas did to Gonzaga, but still pretty impressive. The Bulldogs have the number one per possession offense in the sport right now, according to KenPom. The fact that they were able to get, like, Timmy didn't need to do everything here the way that he needed to do against Michigan State. Right now, Gonzaga 3-1 has a quad one win, you know, what will eventually be deemed a quad one win almost certainly against Michigan State. And then what most certainly will probably also be deemed a quad one win when we get to the end of the season by getting this against Kentucky. You know, Kentucky's taken a couple of rough L's here, and we'll get to them in a few, but I'm not too concerned with that overall. You had Strother. Julian Strother had 14 boards in this game, my man, on top of 20 points. Timmy had 22. So Timmy, you know, he had a game high and played mostly pretty well. And then Rashier Bolton, he had 24. He had the game high and had a couple of buckets that kind of just kept Gonzaga at more than an arm's length from Kentucky there. The surprising part to me with this game was, you know, I was pretty geeked for it. You got a top five matchup in, you know, the second week of the season, and that crowd was certainly ready for it. The biggest crowd in the history of that building, according to the broadcast when they announced that near the end of it. And yet Kentucky just wasn't ready whatsoever. So if you're a Gonzaga fan, you're obviously you're happy not just to get the win, but you get the win going into, I'll see the Zags in a few days here when I fly out to Portland. They're going to be at PK85. The first game is against Portland State. It's a nothing burger. I think that's the last tip of the, eight men's games that are going to get played on Thursday. I think Gonzaga might have the last one of the day. So you figure they'll steamroll that. And then we see in the semifinals and the finals who they might wind up meeting there. But you get another really good, key, important win. And you do so by kind of getting back to the way that you want to play. Michigan State, again, on the aircraft carrier, low scoring game, 64-63. Texas couldn't get it going at all, dropped 74. Here you get 88 the way that you want to get it. And at least for the most part, and averaging better than 1.15 points per possession. That's a good job, Gonzaga's defense. And some of it was just bad shooting by Kentucky. Kentucky was only 6 of 25 from three-point range, one of the biggest things that doomed them. Kentucky was less than a point per possession in this game, GP.
Yeah, I mean, Kentucky took 14 more shots than Gonzaga, still lost the game by 16 points. And that's because they were terrible offensively and terrible defensively. It's a bad combination. Zach shot 56.4% from the field for the game. They were 24 of 36 inside the arc. So they shot 66.7% from two. So Kentucky's defense was just non-existent. Now, Gonzaga is great offensively, but Kentucky showed no resistance whatsoever. On the offensive end of the court, just terrible, especially in the first half. UK was 0 of 10 from three in the first half. Finished 6 of 25. So they were 6 of 15 in the second half. That's better, but still 6 of 25 from three for the game, 24%, pretty terrible. CJ Frederick, Antonio Reeves combined to go 3 of 13 from beyond the arc. I mean, those are UK shooters, and neither one of them made shots. Like, it's, you can maybe get by when one of them's not making shots, but if they're going to combine to take 13, they got to do better than 3 of 13, because the rest of the lineup is largely non-shooters. And so you mentioned Timmy, you know, the player of the year candidates here both performed pretty well in a vacuum. You know, Timmy got 22.7 rebounds on 9 of 13 shooting. Oscar Tshiebwe, 20 points, 15 rebounds on 7 of 12 shooting. Again, both player of the year candidates played well, performed well, but Gonzaga was just the better team on both ends of the court. And that was pretty consistently true from the opening tip to the final horn. Kentucky made a run, you know, middle of the second half, but then Gonzaga stretched it back out pretty quickly and was never really threatened. I know it kind of got close. There was never a point where I was like, oh, wow, Gonzaga's going to lose this game. There was a point where I wondered if Gonzaga was going to cover the four, but there was never a point where I was like, oh, Gonzaga's going to blow this massive lead and lose in Spokane Arena to Kentucky. And, you know, I mentioned at the top, the Wildcats have now lost multiple games in the month of November for just the second time in the past 10 years. It's also the second time in the past 3 years. Mm-hmm. So it's 2 years ago, the weird pandemic year where they were just terrible.
Right.
And then last season, they were good, but lost to St. Peter's in the opening round of the NCAA tournament. And this season, not time to get too concerned. I agree with you. Not time to fire off the alarms.
Kentucky fans might not, though.
Yeah, I mean, here's the truth. Like,
That's allowed. That's allowed.
It would be funny to laugh about Kentucky. I just think Kentucky's still going to be good. I think they've played two good teams, and they lost one of them in double overtime, and they lost this one. I keep calling it a neutral court game only because, you know, it wasn't played in Gonzaga's home arena. But the truth is, Kentucky lost a double overtime game to a Michigan State team that I believe is good, and lost in Spokane, Washington, to Gonzaga in a game that was largely uncompetitive, but, you know, was single digits, you know, late. I'm not concerned. Kentucky underachieving relative to expectations? Sure, because they were supposed to win in the Champions Classic. But underachieving in the way that, say, Florida State's 0-4? No, not the same. Not quite the same thing.
Not even close. This was also a game between our preseason picks to win the national title in 23. You took Gonzaga. I took Kentucky. Kentucky will not be winning the national title if it is incapable of shooting this. If it is incapable of shooting well from three, and then like it loses 44 to 24 points in the paint. Like, there are a lot of reasons why Kentucky lost. Like, it didn't come out with a ton of energy, a ton of aggressiveness. We'll note our good buddy Sam Vecini, who knows, we might hear from him at the end of this podcast. I don't know. We always try and squeeze him in. Never seems like we have too much time. He did note that a lot of what Kentucky was not doing was trying to take advantage of some ball screen action, which, if you saw what Tennessee did in the exhibition and you saw how Gonzaga got rolled at Texas, like, a lot of the stuff that Barnes and Beard were running in those games was to expose Gonzaga's weaknesses in screen actions on the perimeter, and Kentucky just straight up wasn't doing it. I'm not going to speak for Calipari as a coach as to why that wasn't, and yeah, it just didn't happen. And because of that, Kentucky didn't take advantage. Again, 44-24 in the paint when you have the reigning national player of the year, a big, and Timmy's the other side. He was our preseason pick. I get that. That's just, it's jarring. And then, like, the turnovers for Gonzaga are still an issue. I mean, Gonzaga won this game, not going away, but it won by 16. Right. And they still, I mean, GP, they had 18 turnovers. Like, that's another thing where, you know, Gonzaga won't get out of Portland a week from tonight. It would be the championship game. It won't win three games if that's going to keep it up. Gonzaga is going to have to curb that. Goes a little bit back to what I talked about on the previous podcast with the guards and all that. So some of it was with Kentucky. It wasn't shooting well from the perimeter. You know, they were down 41-25 at the half. And this was a case where, like, if you're playing against a team that's allegedly pretty much eye level with you, you know, the 40 minutes almost always do matter. Yes, you can get down by 8-12 and sometimes you can make a run. But if you're in a tough spot, in a tough venue, a tough environment, then at a certain point, you know, a lead might get too big. And that's just the case. Like, if Kentucky had managed to make that, instead of being a 41-25 game, it's 39-33, then yeah, maybe Kentucky actually does pull it out. But no, the gap was just, it was just too big overall. Kentucky doesn't play another notable game for a couple weeks here. I think, I don't have their schedule up in front of me. I think their next big game is actually Michigan across the pond, my man. So they play Gonzaga over on the left coast, and then they've got London against Michigan, which we'll mention the whip around. They got out with an OT win, but it was kind of wild. Jacob Toppin at 16. I'm still waiting for another step, and I think that he'll get there. Sevier Wheeler, I keep going back and forth on Wheeler. There are some, in some ways, I think he can be such a valuable kind of point guard for what Kentucky needs, and other times, you just know that his lack of being a true shooting threat and his size actually can be a hindrance to this team. They just got to get the pieces to come together a bit more. And I do think Cal will get there, but kind of my, you know, put a bow on it for this game is, I know Kentucky fans are getting frustrated because the team is losing, and you, like, losing against Gonzaga in this environment, you can accept, but not losing the way that you lost. If it was an 85-82 loss and it was competitive, like, this was not a game that was capturing my, I watched the whole thing, but I wasn't, like, you know, there have been games where I've been, like, intently watching, riveted by the action. That was not this. So if you're a Kentucky fan, it's not just that you've taken two losses in the first five games for only the second time since Cal's got there. It's the fact that the way that you're losing some of these games, it's compounded by, damn, we had a great team last season, and then we get punked by St. Peter's. Never mind what St. Peter's went on to do, right, make the Elite Eight. The year before that, it's just this historically top five all-time bad kind of season. And so there's this consternation from, like, listen, if we are allegedly going to be a top five team, you know, that we're not, I'm speaking on behalf of the, you know, hypothetically the Kentucky fan base, like, we're not going to exhibit patience with this. You know, you look around the sport in the first couple of weeks of the season, and there are other teams that have not put up really good performances, but they've been able to manage to either play competitively against top 10 competition or eke out wins against non-ranked competition. Kentucky's just not there yet. And we'll wait and see if it's going to be like a classic Cal needs until mid-January to really, you know what this team is. I would argue that should not be the case. Yes, they've got some newbies on the team, but you return the National Player of the Year. Toppin is a veteran, been in this program. Wheeler is a veteran, been in this program. Wallace, defensively, like, there's almost no questions about his capabilities there. Again, no overreacting on our end, but Kentucky fans that I know listening to this podcast, watching, if you have, like, this immense frustration over, like, are we really going to have a team that people think should be top five, top seven, top eight level, and we're going to look up and suddenly, like, we finished third in the SEC. We can't get out of the first weekend of the tournament. If you have some of those worries, I'm not going to say they're misguided, but we do need, you know, three, four, five more games at least worth of inventory to really get a feel of what Cal can and will do with this roster.
I'm not worried about Kentucky, but I will say I reject the idea that, hey, it's a young team, you know, give it time. When you return the National Player of the Year and your point guard, you're not a young team. When you've got, you know, Oscar Tshiebwe and Sevier Wheeler as two of your five starters, and then Jacob Toppin, like you said, who's been in the program multiple years, you're not a young team. And you've supplemented your roster with experienced older transfers in Antonio Reeves and CJ Frederick. You're not a young team. So this is not, you know, whatever trouble John's actual young teams have had in years past in November, December, if you wanted to chalk that up to that, I'll listen to that. This is not a young basketball team. This is just a basketball team that, you know, has lost two games in November, both to quality opponents. And that's concerning on some level, because you didn't expect to be a two-loss team on November 20th. I think, you know, according to the point spread, you're supposed to be a one-loss team on November 20th with a win over Michigan State. And if you had a win over Michigan State and a loss to Gonzaga in Spokane, I think the entire conversation's a little different right now. The problem is that, or at least I think one of the problems, is that certainly at the end of regulation and the end of overtime against Michigan State, they're like one team looked like it knew what it was doing, and the other team did not. And a lot of people pointed to the coaching. Tom Izzo had his team absolutely operating with a complete understanding of what they were trying to do, and then they executed, and John Calipari's team looked like it didn't know what to do. And even after the game, John said, this is after the Michigan State game, John said, hey, my guys weren't, you know, that's on me. We had not practiced those situations very much. And like, I had other coaches reach out to me. I wonder if this is true with you. I had coaches reach out to me after John said what he said after the Michigan State game, and they were like, what is he talking about? They haven't worked on that stuff. Like that's stuff that every program in America works on, like every day. And he's just saying, well, we've screwed those up because we haven't worked on them. Did you hear any of that?
Because I did not. Not to say that, you know, obviously I'm, you know, what you're saying is I'm sure valid, but no, I did not actually wind up hearing any chatter on that from any.
Yeah. So it was just, so that was the Michigan State game. And then against Gonzaga, they just didn't look ready to play. And then a lot of the stuff that Texas, like you pointed out, that Texas and, you know, took advantage of against, like you just had a blueprint from, you know, this past week.
Yeah.
Look at what Texas did to score whenever it wanted to score on Gonzaga. And Kentucky came out and really didn't try to replicate any of that. And one of John's, you know, go-to sayings for as long as I've known him has been, you know, we worry about us. We don't worry about the other team. But I do think sometimes you should acknowledge who you're playing. And if there's clear things that they struggle with defensively, perhaps you can try to expose those things offensively. And really, it didn't look like Kentucky tried to do much of that, which if I were a Kentucky fan, I would wonder why.
Valid. Note on Gonzaga, it's 5-2 in its past seven games against top five competition. That does not account for facing teams in the NCAA tournament. This is just regular season affairs. So again, you know, that's a pretty damn good record. Most of those were on neutral courts. In fact, the only home court situation period Gonzaga's had with this for the past decade plus, I researched it in a pinch right when this game was wrapping. This might be it period, because you got to think about, like, going back, I looked up College Basketball Reference here. You know, there might have been one or two other cases in the 2000s. It goes back to 2009 right now, my data. But Gonzaga's not getting games against many top five opponents, period, no matter the situation, right, for the majority of its existence there. So if there is another game or two here, the inventory isn't large. There was the Texas game a year ago. That was a home game, top five matchup, Gonzaga won. But five, you know, they had some losses previous to that. But as of late, they've been doing just fine. And for the most part, not on their home floor when they're, you know, playing. It's not even, you know, playing themselves being a top five team, going up against a top five team on the other side, and 5-2 in the past seven.
So that's Gonzaga, Kentucky. You mentioned to me off air that you're going to write a column about that. Is that still true? You think you're writing about this tonight?
I'll get something out before the night's done. Yeah.
All right. So everybody will be able to find that later on at cbssports.com. Let's move on. Gonzaga, Kentucky wasn't the only big game of the weekend. The Zags were not the only national program that got a big win on Sunday. Virginia did too. The Cavaliers are now 4-0 with victories over Baylor and Illinois. We're going to talk about Tony Bennett's team next, but first, a word from our partners.
Did you know that while over 60% of Americans dream of starting their own business, less than 20% of them take the first step? The reason? Building a business is tough. Taylor Brands is simplifying the business journey. From launching and managing to growing your business, Taylor Brands isn't just another tool. It's your online business partner from launch to success. With Taylor Brands, building your dream business becomes an effortless experience. Their comprehensive platform guides you through every step, ensuring you have everything you need in one place. From LLC formation to bookkeeping, invoicing to acquiring licenses and permits, and even setting up your bank account, Taylor Brands handles it all seamlessly. And our listeners will receive 35% off Taylor Brands LLC formation plans using our link, taylorbrands.com/CBS Sports. That's TAILORBRANDS.com/CBS Sports. So start your business journey today with Taylor Brands.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
So Virginia had a terrific weekend. On Friday, Cavaliers beat Baylor 86-79, just really ran away from them in the second half. And then on Sunday, beat Illinois 70-61. So Virginia is now 4-0 with two top 25 KenPom wins. Deadleg, remember when I told you this offseason that multiple coaches had told me while we were doing our Candid Coaches series, they were like, listen, Virginia, I'm telling you, is going to finish top two in the ACC ahead of either North Carolina or Duke and possibly ahead of both. That's what that is what happened.
That's revisionist history. I believe it went in some sort of order of me being like, GP, Virginia's going to be pretty good. Then you got the feedback from the coaches. Then it was like, they're going to be top three or top four. And now you're saying they're going to win the whole damn thing.
No, I actually did have coaches tell me Virginia will win the ACC. And then I had multiple coaches say they'll finish top two. They'll be ahead of either Carolina or Duke and possibly ahead of both. And that's when I was compelled for really no reason other than this is what I keep hearing from coaches. I'm going to adjust the top 25 and one accordingly. I believe the first time ever updated the offseason top 25 and one without any sort of roster move. I just said, hey, listen, I'm going to change something because I keep hearing great things about Virginia and I feel like I should get them in the top 25 and one. So I did that in September. And now look now. Virginia's 4-0. They just recorded two top 25 KenPom wins and I've got them all the way up to ninth in the top 25 and one. That we'll update again on Monday morning. What do you make of the start of the season for Tony Bennett's?
Yeah, two top 20 wins according to the AP rankings. Those will obviously refresh on Monday, and we'll see. And we'll get to our quickie thoughts on the other teams in this Continental Tire main event thing. Illinois got an impressive win against UCLA, but then they lost. So Illinois might maintain top 20 status overall in the AP poll when it refreshes. But Virginia, it probably would be 5-0 if not for having to cancel its game against Northern Iowa, which was scheduled for last Monday. Of course, there was the tragedy, which we've addressed and talked about on this podcast there. Also, obviously, the backdrop to this entire thing is that, you know, on Saturday, there was a huge memorial at John Paul Jones Arena, obviously where Virginia men's basketball plays its home games, to remember the murdered three football players that were there, that were killed a week ago. And the Virginia men's basketball team could not be there because it was playing in this event. And, you know, this was a heavy backdrop, and all things considered, like, it would have been entirely reasonable considering the field and everything going on if Virginia had made this trip and had taken, instead of winning 86-79 and 70-61, was on the losing end of those kind of scores, would have been understandable, right? But that's not what happened. They were able to really play with such spirit, and it's a credit to the players, no doubt about it. It also is a credit to Tony Bennett, how he runs that program. And it really was something to see Virginia do what it did, because it was and remains to be a very emotional time and a very powerful weekend for that community and that campus in Charlottesville. And so, yes, on the floor, Virginia gets a pair of wins that reinforces, you know, its top five in multiple predictive metrics right now. And to beat Baylor, preseason national title contender, Final Four type, Illinois, projected by some to be the best team in the Big Ten. That's a couple of really, really impressive wins. And they did it with a variety of contributions. Like, okay, so Virginia shut down and getting the win over Illinois, which apparently the Illinois fans traveled magnificently, which is great to see.
They look great.
And Virginia's got the same color, so on TV on Sunday.
But that was Illinois, because if you watched on Friday, it was all Illinois.
I know. I got you. No doubt about it. Like, and credit to Illinois. They were fired up. But the point I was going to make was Illinois really traveled, and they had like a really great environment for that. And So for Virginia to kind of just turn off the water, super impressive. Reese Beekman had 27 points across both games over the weekend, GP. 27 points, 13 assists, 4 steals, 4 turnovers. Armon Franklin wasn't as good on Sunday as he was Friday, 33 points, 5 steals. They got, and then like, if you really watched how they won both those games, like there are times when it feels like Caden Shedrick is going to be top 5, top 10 defender in the sport. And there will be games when he's not even the best defender on the team. Ben Vanderplas had his moments, although I was watching the game today and my wife, who just, she, God love her, she loves, well, she likes, she can watch the NFL, she'll watch golf, she'll watch tennis, she'll watch the Olympics. She's got zero, like college football, zero interest. Any kind of basketball, zero interest. So occasionally, like, she'll just, you know, I'll be watching a game, she'll be on in the room with me as it's on. And Ben Vanderplas is at the line. He's got this stash. And she goes, how old is he? Because he looks 29. And I was like, that's a good question. Let me look it up. And Vanderplas, 24 now.
So, oh, wow.
Crazy, right? But he is a grown-ass man and had himself a nice weekend as well. Right now, Beekman, Franklin, Kihei Clark, and Vanderplas all shooting 46% or better from three-point range for Virginia. Again, it is early. We are only 4 games in. Those numbers are highly unlikely to be able to sustain themselves. Isaac McNeely off the bench there, he's at 50%, 6 of 12 shooting. Virginia is getting it on both sides of the floor right now. They rate technically better overall in offense than defense. We'll see if that can actually be maintained there. But Virginia fans obviously have a very real reason to have optimism that, hey, why does it have to be Carolina or Duke? Like, why won't we come back and win the ACC the way, you know, we did more times than not over the previous 8, 9, 10 years when Tony Bennett was establishing himself as king of the throne in that conference?
Everything that you saw from Virginia this weekend is exactly why you can start reasonably thinking that the Cavaliers can win the ACC, even though they're in the same league with the preseason number one team. You mentioned most of the notable guys, and this was to me among the interesting things. On Friday, it was Armon Franklin leading the team on the offensive end of the court. On Sunday, it was Reese Beekman. So two different guys taking that responsibility. After Terrence Shannon went nuts on Friday, they shut him down on Sunday. He only had 9 points. He got 29 against UCLA on Friday.
He was absurd. Awesome. It was a top 3 offensive performance from any, maybe both sides of the floor performance from any player so far this season.
He was great. And then Virginia just shut him down on Sunday. And then you mentioned Ben Vanderplas. He is, for people who might not know, he's the Ohio transfer, giving him really good minutes off the bench. You know, he got 14 points and 2 rebounds against Baylor, got 8 points and 10 rebounds against Illinois. So rock solid 6-man performances in both of those games. And for what it's worth, KenPom now projects Virginia to finish 16-4 in the ACC and win the league by 1 game. The current projections, Virginia 16-4, Duke 15-5, North Carolina 14-6. So we are now literally just 14 days into this season, and already KenPom is projecting the preseason number one AP team to finish 3rd in its own league.
And well, we'll see where we get with on that. But the event overall, I said on the Friday podcast, I thought at least one of those games would be really close and compelling. Technically, Baylor UCLA was the closest one. But it was nice to see 4 ranked teams, 4 teams with, you know, viable Final Four aspirations in an event like that. And yeah, again, shouts to Illinois fans for showing up. If it's cool with you, GP, let me just roll through the other 3 teams real quick. I'll go alphabetical order. Take it where you want after that. Baylor first. So they lose 86-79 on Friday against Virginia. And I mean, damn, Virginia came out of the half, I think it was a 30-5 run on Baylor, which is that's not happening to
Scott. It was something like that. And then it was like, I think a different version of that run was like 22-1.
Yeah.
Something like, it was something ridiculous like that. And then Baylor actually outscored Virginia pretty significantly in the final like 9+ minutes of the game. Like, but Baylor like was awesome the final 9 minutes of the game, but they were already down by so many. They just couldn't, they couldn't really close the gap significantly enough.
Similar to the Gonzaga Kentucky thing I was mentioning earlier. If they're about eye level with you most nights, if the gap gets too big, you're just not going to be able to compensate enough. And Baylor was not able to do that. But yeah, there were points where just Virginia was blowing them off the floor there. And in the moment, that's when it was eye opening for me on the Virginia side. But as for Baylor, it's able to come back on Sunday, win 80-75 over UCLA, and at least get the split. And Flagler and Cryer were outstanding. LJ Cryer, coming off of injury, had 28 points. Flagler had 22. Keontae George only had 4 points in the game on Sunday there. And I think it's actually an encouraging thing because George has been inconsistent. You know, he was my pick for preseason National Freshman of the Year. He had 20 in the Virginia game, only had 4 here. But, and I did talk to Scott Drew about this a little bit in the preseason when I was just trying to get his read on his team and what expectations were. And he kind of reinforced to me, Keontae has a killer instinct, not afraid of the big moment. We love it. But I would expect us to really lean on Flagler and just the guys who have been there and done it. You know, they were once upon a time, neither of these guys were nearly as regarded coming into college as George is, obviously. But to get that kind of play out of the guards, those are the only two that scored in double digits for Baylor against UCLA. And yet, you know, UCLA, we'll get to them in just a second here. They probably had a more balanced offensive repertoire overall, but it just didn't matter. Just that for Baylor to get out of there 1-1 with Cryer and Flagler playing the way that they did, I thought was super, super impressive and certainly notable there. Illinois got out of there 1-1 too, GP. They get the win on Friday, then they can't get it done against Virginia. But the win, 79-70 against UCLA, Terrence Shannon was 8 of 9 from 3-point range. I think I got this in my notes here. Okay, so yeah, he had, that was 29 points, 1 point shy of his career high. He had 10 boards, 3 dimes. Again, this is on Friday. His 8 3-pointers match Illinois' all-time single-night record. And according to ESPN Stats and Info, in the past, this is crazy. Okay, Shannon and Trae Young are the only players in the past 25 years to go for 25, 10 boards, and 8 threes while playing on a big stage in a top 25 matchup, both teams ranked. Trae Young did it against the Horned Frogs back in 2018. Big time stuff there.
Is that from Jared Burson?
It's from ESPN Stats and Info.
Call that Jared Burson.
Okay. As previously mentioned, he no longer works at ESPN.
Yeah, but I don't care. I'm going to ignore that.
But feel free.
I'm going to keep pretending that he does.
Okay. Fair enough. I also have to mention Dane Danger.
I love Dane Danger.
Dane Danger, previously at Baylor, like the threads that connect us, right? Dane Danger has been dangerous. He was just okay on Sunday. It was the first time he didn't go for a double-double. But first of all, we will inject Dane Danger into this podcast as frequently as is required, and maybe not even required, because he's genuinely a net positive for Illinois, and he's another one. See, Illinois has been able to get Coleman Hawkins has been what they hoped he would be. Terrence Shannon, maybe better than they expected him to be. Sky Clark, for the most part, been pretty good. Matthew Meyer, maybe he's been good, but he hasn't been what they made. But again, we're early.
Meyer is just going to end up always being a guy who, like, man, I thought he was going to be really good next year.
That might be the case. We'll see. I don't want to sell him short entirely, but I get the point you're making there. But between Danger, RJ Melendez has hit some big shots there. If you're Illinois and you're an Illinois fan and you're honest with yourself, while you would have liked to have, and especially with all the fans that travel there, if you'd like to have gone 2-0, you would have wished it. But getting out of there 1-1, I think is entirely reasonable. And I'll be quick on UCLA, GP, and then take it where you want. Someone's got to go home 0-2, and it's UCLA here. Now, Jalen Clark continues to impress me across the board. I actually thought he was, all things considered, he was actually pretty damn good against Baylor overall. Tiger Kimball's been pretty solid. Jaquez has not, we haven't had him as a preseason first team All-American. He's just not there yet. We'll see. I kind of think the story is Amari Bailey. Amari Bailey right now has not hit. He is averaging 25 minutes through 5 games, is 3 for 15 total in his college career from the field. Just as many assists as turnovers, 9 apiece there. We'll see on all of that. it's obviously not good for the Pac-12 on top of all this. I'll read you a quote from Cronin after this game. Shouts to Ben Bulch, the UCLA beat writer. Here's what Cronin said after the loss here, UCLA going home 0-2. I tell the guys the truth. I'm not very popular in this area, but I don't care. The problem, to really give you a truthful answer, is they'll be told that I'm the problem from their outer circle and that they're all great players. That's what they'll be told. So ultimately, you've got to recruit guys who do what they need to do to get better and win games like this if you want to be a real program. But in our era of basketball, it's okay whether you win, lose, or draw for a lot of people. They could care less if we win. It's they being the people in the outer circle. It's all about is a guy getting his stats and things like that. So that's the goal of coaching in this era. You've got to overcome it. The truth of it is we've got good guys on the team and we're just not good enough defensively right now to beat Baylor. We gave up 51 in the second half the other night and we gave up 43 in the second half tonight. Cronin's correct. I love this about him. He never seems to be afraid of being critical of his team without being over the top or unnecessary about it. They do need these hard truths. This has worked for him for the majority of his career. I still like UCLA in the long term. Someone had to go 0-2. I just don't like the way I saw UCLA going 0-2. And so the Bruins have a lot to figure out. It's not just all on Bailey, but he's not hitting. Like, Bona's still got plenty of potential. He's not there as well. UCLA's next test won't come until December 1st. That's a road game against Stanford. Their next two are against Pepperdine and, well, Bellarmine on November 27th. Bellarmine's a little bit sneaky. We'll see there. But any thoughts on any of those teams before we move on to other things around the country?
Yeah, well, it sounds like those were interesting quotes after UCLA's second loss in Las Vegas. After the first one, I don't know the context of it. I just saw the quote on social media, but I'm assuming Mick was asked something about some UCLA player, or perhaps he wasn't. But either way, he said something along the lines of, I've got nothing good to say about anybody.
Oh, I didn't see this. Okay.
I've got nothing good to say about anybody at UCLA, and that includes their coach. So,
okay. Well, then I'll, by all means. Okay.
Off to a bit of a rocky start. This is a culture thing that I think he not struggles with, but certainly I can remember at the CBS Sports Classic, maybe it was Mick's first year at UCLA, and we're out in, I want to say Las Vegas, but it could have been somewhere else. Either way, day before the game, I'm doing interviews for CBS Sports HQ with all of the coaches, and I remember talking to Mick, and one of the things, because this team was struggling, whatever was going on, this team was struggling. And I remember him saying, you know, I'm just in this situation now where, you know, it's who blinks first. Like, I inherit a lot of these players, and they have habits and ways of doing things that I have to break, but they're being resistant. And so we're struggling and we're losing. And I just have to convince them I'm not changing. I know how to do this. I've been successful. I'm not changing. So you're going to have to change or you're going to have to leave. Instead, eventually we'll get this right. And then, of course, they end up in the Final Four the following year. And they were good again last season. And he seemed like he had mostly gotten that to a good place. Because I have heard from other UCLA coaches, let's just put it that way, that it is a different place in terms of, there's a lot of agents in California, in Southern California. There's just a lot of things that you deal with in LA that you don't necessarily have to deal with other places. And it looked like he'd got that to a pretty under control into a good place. And his comments, at least after this game, suggest that maybe it's a bit of a struggle with this roster as well. On Amari Bailey, he's obviously a high profile 5-star guy. We've talked about him a lot for various reasons. To me, it's not even that he's like not making, he's a scorer who's not taking shots. He took 5 shots in the first game in Vegas and 5 shots in the second game in Las Vegas. I didn't think he would be limited. If you told me Amari Bailey starting at UCLA as a freshman, I say, okay, he's not taking 5 shots a game, but he took 5 shots a game in Las Vegas, which is noticeable. I don't know that it's concerning, but it's noticeable. And so they've got some things to figure out, but I suspect that they probably will. It's just, they didn't get run off the court necessarily. You know, in these games, they just lost, and there's some issues that need to be addressed, and I suspect they'll figure it out at some point.
All right, let's do our weekend whip around. But before I roll on it, what stood out to you? What do you want to touch on first here?
Well, I will tell you that, you know, there will be one change in Monday morning's top 25 and one, and it'll be me removing Virginia Tech, which had got off to a nice start, but, you know, lost on Sunday at Charleston.
Mm-hmm.
And
truly at Charleston, by the way. Lost in an MTE, but it was at Charleston.
Yeah, they didn't just play Charleston in Charleston. They played at Charleston.
That's true.
And replacing them will be Maryland, which is off to a 5-0 start. And they've got wins over St. Louis, got wins over Miami. Convincing wins.
Yes.
Over St. Louis and Miami. The Terps started the season. I always think this is interesting to see who's really performing. Started the season 56th at KenPom. We're 14 days into the season. They're now up to number 23.
Ah, and I will. Jeez, that is a jump. I mean,
they moved 33 spots to the good in a 5-game span in a 2-week span. So, a better than anybody could have reasonably expected start for Kevin Willard at Maryland, and now the Terps will be in Monday morning's top 25-1.
A couple notes on that. So yeah, Charleston won the Charleston Classic for the first time. Pat Kelsey's team is 5-1, 3 top 100 wins. Its lone loss, a competitive one against Carolina. Just know this now, just put it in your back pocket and put those pair of pants in your closet till March. Just remember, Towson, Charleston, Hofstra, collectively 13-2 right now. Those three teams are on a tier to themselves by far from everyone else in the CAA. Almost certainly one of those three will make it to the tournament. And particularly Towson and Charleston. Hofstra's still good too, but Towson and Charleston feel like Cinderella candidates here. You're able to do that. You come out of the CAA, you got 3 top 100 wins before you even get to December or Thanksgiving. That's a huge get there. Dante Scott from Maryland has been really, really good. Over the past two games, 24.5 points, 6.5 rebounds, shot 12 of 16 from inside the three-point range and was 5.9 from beyond the arc there. So that's they beat St. Louis by 28, Miami by 18. So that's, I think you're entirely right there with Maryland and Don Carey. Certainly good for Kevin Willard that he's got, he continues to be a viable perimeter option. I wasn't sure if Maryland would be a top 50 team, or I wasn't overly confident going into the season, but I did pick him to make the NCAAs. In our final preseason episode there, and it certainly the team is off to a nice start to that that effect. Willard is the only Maryland coach ever to start 5-0 at that program. Elsewhere, sticking the Big Ten, I'm just going to mention the fact that Michigan needed overtime to get out against Ohio. Ohio actually should have won the game, blew it in the final minute, terrible foul on the opposing free throw line. I think it was Bufkin that went to the line. It makes two. Then the most absurd sequence where it got inbounded, hit off.
The ball just died off the backboard.
Incredible. Incredible. They sink it. It goes to overtime. Yeah,
for people who didn't actually see it, it is a full court length of the court pass that like hits in between the backboard.
I think Nada has it. Nada, do you have it?
You told me I didn't need it, so I deleted it. For all right,
now he did. He technically didn't say it. I didn't know if we'd go this deep into it, so we do.
What is the point in even talking before the podcast if that's still going to happen?
That's so people, funny. Anyway, it was absurd.
It's a length of the court. It's like the Christian Laettner play. If the pass soared over Christian Laettner's head and hit between the rim of the backboard and then just died. And it just falls into a player's hands, and then he misses it. But then offensive rebound, stick back. It was a wild play.
And it's Michigan coming off of getting rolled by Arizona State overtime to beat an Ohio team. You know, Jeff Bowles is a good coach. Just lost one of his best players to Virginia, Vander Plaza. We talked about Ohio now 1-3. Also has a 1-point loss on the road against Belmont. So we'll wait and see. Elsewhere in Michigan. Real quick, on Friday night, Michigan State beat Villanova. Sparty led by as many as 16 in the second half. Nova did. It was a 73-71 final. I was impressed to see Kyle Neptune's players simply refuse to just fold and go home. Michigan State won the game because it was 13 of 25 from three-point range. If that doesn't happen, Villanova, it might have been a little bit of a different story. I continue to love what Tyson Walker is bringing to Michigan State. He had 22 points, 5 assists. A.J. Hogarth had 13, 10 dimes, 8 boards. Good for MSU. Elsewhere, another loser. We talked about how UCLA had to go 0-2 at the Hall of Fame tip-off. That's what Maryland won. Providence went 0-2, reigning Big East regular season champs. We'll see if Ed Cooley can recoup his team and recover in the weeks to come. But I just wanted to simply note that. UMass, shouts to UMass, won its MTE down in Myrtle Beach thanks to victories over Colorado, Murray State, and Charlotte. Frank Martin's team is 4-1. Paying immediate dividends there. Maybe they'll make some noise in the A-10. We'll wait and see, but they were not expected to win that MTE. They go ahead and do it. Speaking of Colorado, make it make sense, Parrish. They're 3-3 with wins over Tennessee and A&M, but losses to Grambling State, UMass, and then they got dropped on Sunday to Boise State. There is no team more schizophrenic from a resume standpoint in this point in the season than the Colorado Buffaloes.
And it's not just 3-3. It's 3-3 with a win-loss, win-loss, win-loss.
Correct, which means Yale is in for a world of hurt because that's next on the schedule. So there we go on that. Colorado's they're a bizarre one. I will note that Amando Bacot got a career high 23 rebounds in North Carolina's win over James Madison. He also had 19 points there. One of those deals where Bacot was basically third in line preseason player of the year, Timmy Shibwe, then Bacot. If Carolina is going to be top five level, right, for most of the season, or top 10 hanging in the polls, they take a loss, they drop from 1-4 or 4-9 or whatever. If he's going to be competing with Timmy for rebound average nationally, and he's probably going to score just as much, that's going to become all the more viable. Keep an eye on that. JMU actually put up a good fight. We gave you a heads up on that on the Friday pod, but UNC was able to get out with the win. I do have a Fighting Camels update, my man.
Let's hear it.
Campbell. All right. Shouts to Ken Pomeroy, who tweeted this. I'm taking his tweet as gospel, as everyone should. Just simply notable because we had apparently something historic happen over the weekend. Quote, Southeastern Louisiana overcame a 20-point deficit with 4:58 to go to beat Campbell. Per the NCAA record book, that's a new record for the largest deficit overcome with 5 minutes left. We hate to see Campbell on the wrong side of this, but it's history nonetheless, and we never shy from our Fighting Camels talk on this podcast there. Making it all the more unlikely, though, Southeastern Louisiana was 319 in KenPom, 140 spots below Campbell heading into that game. So not only historic, but like really mathematically almost improbable and certainly unlikely given the gap between those teams. Only other things I have from the weekend here, you mentioned FSU. They're 0-4. They had a 19-point home lead to Florida. They lost by 9. The Seminoles haven't been 0-4 since 1959. In a mind-blowing stat.
What's wild, people don't realize this, Leonard Hamilton was 70 years old in 1959.
I knew you were going there, but I thought you were going to be kind and at least put him mid-20s, my man.
That was rough. 70 in 59.
How about FSU? This is per Elias Sports Bureau. FSU is only the fourth ACC team in history to start 0-4. I'm going to say that again. History of the ACC, only four teams have ever started 0-4 and worse, or worse. FSU is one of them. There's another 0-4 team. Ay, 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 man. Cal lost on Friday night at home to drop 0-4, but it lost to Southern U, 74-66. I tried to go back to the record books of the 40s, 30s, and 20s because I'm an absolute sicko. I'm pretty sure this is only the second time ever Cal has started 0-4 in a season. The other one was in 97. This, I think, could be rock bottom for this program. They're 51-109 since the start of the 2017-18 season. And, you know, it actually, I don't know where you go from here. Mark Fox is on staff there, obviously, and Mark Fox has done really good things at some other programs there, but I don't know. And weirdly enough, Cal is 200th at KenPom. Oregon State, which is 3-1, shouts to Beaver Fever, 238. Now, again, that's preseason predictive stuff still baked in, so that's going to take a while to shake out there. So we'll see. Just had to note that. Meantime, the SWAC, 4-4 in all games versus the Pac-12 this season. The Pac-12, as we speak, let's see, I'm on a delay on my – yeah, here we go. Coming out of the second half, 31-24, Oregon losing at home. If Oregon loses this game to Houston, which we both predicted on our Final 4-1, the Pac-12 will be 30-20 through the first 2 weeks of the season. For a power conference, that is straight up abysmal. We went over the league records on a few, might have been the most recent one, GP. But you can't have that. So we'll see if Oregon can turn this around. If you're listening on Monday or Tuesday, we told you we'd get this podcast rolling before Houston, Oregon was finalized. But right now, Cougars are up big.
Yeah, the only other things that I think are notable from the weekend, Jim Larrañaga got his 700th career win by beating his alma mater, Providence. That was on Saturday. And then, of course, he got his 476th career loss by losing to Maryland, which we noted is now 5-0 and in the top 25-1. And shouts to Loyola Marymount.
There we go. Stan Johnson.
Love Stan Johnson. Went to Jamaica, beat Georgetown and Wake Forest. So Stan Johnson's Lions are now 4-2 with wins over a Big East school and an ACC school. Not bad.
Not bad at all.
And good for the WCC.
Certainly good for the WCC, yes. And Georgetown was able to get out of that. They were able to beat LaSalle. So Georgetown's actually 3-2 as we speak here. But that is good for the WCC, good for the likes of St. Mary's and BYU, let alone Gonzaga there. If they can have teams that are still, you know, in the mix competitive, Santa Clara might also have something to say about that. So, yeah, that's a good result. I think that's pretty much – I mean, there's, you know, other stuff here and there, but we don't want to get too into the minutia there. You want to –
Did you know that parents rank financial literacy as the number one most difficult life skill to teach? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app for families. With Greenlight, you send instant money transfers, set up chores, automate allowance, and keep an eye on your kids' spending. With real-time notifications, kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. And parents can rest easy knowing their kids are learning about money with guardrails in place. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
You want to talk Maui? Because Maui gets rolling on Monday, my man.
Yeah, let's look ahead to the Maui Invitational. It's an 8-team event. 3 days. We'll crown a champion on Wednesday. We'll get started on Monday. The games are as follows: Texas Tech, Creighton, Arkansas, Louisville, Ohio State, San Diego State, Arizona, Cincinnati. That's how we go on Monday. So I've got Creighton, Arkansas, San Diego State, and Arizona winning first round games, which would mean I'd have an Arkansas Creighton semifinal, and an Arizona San Diego State semifinal. And then I've got Arkansas and Arizona winning those games and Arkansas over Arizona in the title game. So I've got Arkansas as my Maui Invitational champion. But it should be noted, and perhaps this is something that should have prevented me from doing this, Nick Smith hasn't played yet. This five-star freshman, projected top five pick in the 2023 NBA draft, got a right knee issue. And the latest I had heard Eric Musselman, the most recent time that he addressed it, he said Nick Smith hadn't been practicing. And so it doesn't sound like he's going to be available in Maui, although he did travel to Maui, I'm told. But, you know, most of us thought that Nick Smith would be Arkansas's best player. And so far, Arkansas hasn't had him, and it's unclear if they're going to have him over the next few days.
That's enough for me to not pick Arkansas to win the bracket, because this is a really good field. It's actually, it's better than I think we would have blindly expected in a PK year, if you will. PK 85 is going to have so many really good, all obviously Nike affiliated teams at that event. And so when this was, when it happened 5 years ago, Maui was still good. That was the year that Notre Dame won. Mike Bray famously took his shirt off and exposed, you know, exposed what he exposed. So
nipples.
Correct.
Mike Bray has nipples.
In fact, I remember vividly, unfortunately, I think that was the last year, I rant about this every year, and real ones feel me. I think that was the last year that Maui's title game was in its rightful place as the last tip on Wednesday night, because I went to PK 80 that year, and instead of flying the day before Thanksgiving, I opted to fly like a 6 a.m. connecting flight. Like I flew from White Plains to Chicago, then to Chicago to Portland. And God, so I'm in line at security. I bring this openly because I remember this vividly. Like, was in line at security. I must have, I probably drove to the airport and parked there, because when I'm waiting to get cleared to get on the plane, I bring out my phone and I'm like, I want to see like who won last night. Like, I went to bed so early because I had to get up for this early flight. And I'm in line, like groggy as all hell. It's got to be 5:30 in the morning. And
raise your hand. Have you ever been to White Plains Airport at 5:30 in the morning? Woo boy. That is miserable.
It is.
And it is miserable.
Yes.
Dude, I have stood.
It's a great airport, but it's tiny. So like
In front of the White Plains Airport, it's 0 degrees, pitch black dark. And it's not even, they ain't even opened the front doors yet. I'm just like standing there, and then you go inside and there is nothing. You can't get a cup of coffee. You can't get a bagel.
No chance.
It is.
That's like a 7 a.m. open kind of situation there. So, but I'm standing waiting, you know, for, to go through security. I bring up my phone. Who won Maui? And sure as hell, I see like photos and then videos of Mike Bray going topless celebrating. I'm like, okay. I really wish I would have stayed up and watched this thing, because this is outrageous. So, but I don't think that, so that was when the title game was late, and I don't think it's happened since then. But that was a decent field. This one is even better. I will pick GP. You know what I'll do? And this one, I think I mentioned this on the pod. I'm almost positive I mentioned it on the pod, because we talked about the damn Maui field like 15 times, because almost every single one of these teams were a summer shoot-around team. The only team that doesn't have red as its predominant color is Creighton.
Creighton.
So I'm going to pick the blue. I'm going to take the blue team to win. Every other team: Texas Tech, Louisville, Arkansas, Ohio State, San Diego State, Arizona, Cincinnati. Their most prominent hue in their colorway is red or an alteration thereof. And so I will fade that, and I will go Blue Jays. I'll say this, GP. Dude, that's a great game. That's a ranked matchup on Monday, 2:30 Eastern. Reminder: 2:30 Eastern, 1:30 Central, 12:30 Mountain, 9:30 Pacific, 10:30 Alaskan. Dude, Creighton's got to play at 9:30 Hawaiian time against Texas Tech's defense. That sounds absolutely miserable.
Let me tell you something about being in Maui. It doesn't matter, because you are awake at 4:30 in the morning. Dude, I've been to Maui one time, and it's beautiful. I mean, I loved it. And for like, I hear you, like having the championship game, the last game, is like great from a television perspective. From a in-person perspective, knocking that thing out in the middle of the day early. Woo. Like, I had a great last day on the island. And that's because we knocked that game out pretty early. It was a Gonzaga Duke when I was there. Gonzaga, Duke, Zion Williamson,
Rui
Hachimura.
Yeah. I remember. Yeah. That was a really good game. That was a really good game. Yeah.
Yeah, it was great. So like in person, you wanted out, knocked out early. On TV, yeah, I'd like to spend late Wednesday watching, you know, a relevant, awesome college basketball game. But whatever. I will say this. It's kind of crazy when you think, God, they're playing basketball at 9:30 in the morning. You are up at 5 o'clock in the morning. I never got adjusted while I was in Maui. I remember one morning I woke up and it was like 5 a.m. and I'm just, it's not like I woke, because I wake up all the time in the middle of the night, but I was awake. It's like, all right, I'm done sleeping. I'm awake now. And I was like, okay, well, this is nice. Like the sun's about to come up and I'll just go, you know, everybody else will be asleep and I'll just go for a nice walk as the sun rises on the beach. And boy, this is the life. And I went outside. Literally everybody was outside. I saw John Shire walking around with his wife and baby. Everybody, it was 6 a.m. and everybody was outside like it's noon. And that's because you're just still on normal continental United States time. And so playing at 9, just trust me when I tell you, everybody's wide awake, ready to play basketball at 9:30 a.m. They've already been up for 5 hours.
I hear you completely on that. And that's a wonderful daytime game. Obviously, you know, we had the MTEs from last weekend. Now they bleed over into this weekend. And man, this is just, it's an awesome week for the Hoop Soul. You'll have Maui and then obviously PK85 along with a variety of other events there throughout the weekend. I'll take Creighton to win. You laid out your bracket, so I'll just do it on the fly here as well. I'll say Creighton over Tech, obviously Arkansas over Louisville. I'll take San Diego State over Ohio State. Credit to Ohio State's SID for this note in their team notes here. This means nothing, but it was noted. The FIFA World Cup starts this week, and while this may not be a note, Ohio State has made the NCAA tournament in each of the last 6 World Cup years. Sure, why not? The last time these teams met, by the way, Ohio State and San Diego State, was in Maui in 2003. San Diego State won that game 83-61. I don't think the gap will be quite that wide. That's actually kind of wild. 83-61, San Diego State, the start of the Fisher era. But I'll take SDSU to win. And then, Arizona Cincy is certainly, I think that might sneaky be the close one. Like, that's got an 11:30 Eastern tip at night. And, like, you know, maybe we're still locked in at that, at like 1:25 a.m. Eastern, and Cincy's keeping it close. But I'll take Arizona. Then I will take Creighton to beat Arkansas. I will take San Diego State to beat Arizona. And I will take Creighton over San Diego State in the title game.
You're predicting, this is interesting to me, because you're predicting the only blue team to win. It's lining up a little bit like the midterms.
Okay.
All I heard about the midterms is there's going to be a red tsunami. I heard there was a red tsunami on the way, and then it just wasn't. And so in Maui, all I've been hearing, actually saw Clay Travis, he tweeted about this. He said in Maui, it's going to be a red tsunami. He said, okay, I got the midterms wrong, but trust me, when it comes to Maui, red tsunami, and you're saying not so fast, my friend, it could be a blue tsunami via the Creighton Blue Jays.
Give me the Jays.
How about that? I'm not against Creighton winning the Maui Invitational.
Should be a pretty good field. I think 5 of the 8 teams can win. I'd be surprised if it was Louisville. I'd be surprised.
Oh my God. You'd be surprised.
I know.
I too would be surprised if Louisville won the Maui Invitational. I'd be surprised if Louisville wins a game in the Maui Invitational.
I'd be surprised if Louisville, Cincy, or Ohio State won. I think any of the other 5 can win.
Louisville should have refused to go to the Maui Invitational.
Yeah.
We done with that?
Yeah, I'm all. Gave you my pick, man.
All right, there is an awful story connected to college basketball from this weekend that I did want to address. It involves New Mexico and New Mexico State. What we heard, I guess, initially on Saturday is that a New Mexico State player had been involved in a shooting on New Mexico's campus. Now we have more details connected to that, and it's just an awful, awful situation. According to Annalisa Pardo, who works for KRQE News 13 in Albuquerque, the New Mexico State player who is involved in the shooting is Mike Peek. And according to the reports and what police believe to be true, is that 4 New Mexico students, New Mexico State is on the road in Albuquerque to play New Mexico. Big rivalry game, in-state, right? Like, they're going to have 15,000 people in the pit. It's a big deal. I know neither team's ranked, so it's not like something we talked about on, you know, Friday's podcast.
Right. This obviously story's going way over the line, but this is a genuinely intense intrastate rivalry in many sports between the two, because they're the two huge D1 schools in that state.
That's right. So New Mexico State's on the road to play New Mexico in Albuquerque. And the night before the game, according to the reports, Mike Peek, a New Mexico State player, is lured to the New Mexico campus by four New Mexico students, one of whom is a 17-year-old female. And connecting some dots, it sounds like three New Mexico students, including a 19-year-old named Brandon Travis, used a New Mexico female student to lure Mike Peek to the campus. In other words, it sounds like he thought he was going to hook up. And he goes to the New Mexico campus under, you know, the pretense that he's meeting, it sounds like, a young woman. And instead, there are multiple New Mexico students who have planned to, the way it was reported, and I'm just quoting the report, assault him. And an altercation ensues, and Mike Peek and Brandon Travis, it appears, exchange gunfire. And Brandon Travis died at the scene. He's the New Mexico student. And Mike Peek is the New Mexico State student / basketball player who was hospitalized with non-life-threatening injuries. He's reportedly in stable condition. But it does appear that he pulled the trigger on a gun that killed a New Mexico student. Perhaps we will find out that he is legally in the right here. I'm not sure, and I wouldn't want to speculate on that. But it's and by the way, Mike Peek is not, as of this recording, been charged with a crime. He has been hospitalized with a gunshot wound. But even the best version of this story has a New Mexico State starter going to New Mexico's campus late at night with a gun and subsequently shooting and killing a New Mexico student under whatever circumstances. So it's just an ugly story that will have more answers to the questions as I'm sure the week unfolds. But even what we know right now is it's not a great look for anybody.
Oh, and these are two programs that are not in the same conference. They're in the same state. Obviously, New Mexico is in the Mountain West. New Mexico State is in the WAC. But because of the nature of the rivalry and how old it is, it is actually a rare instance where in most years the teams are actually scheduled to play each other twice. They play two non-conference games against each other. And that's for rivalry's sake, but also geography's sake. These are relatively isolated places in the grander map of Division I out in New Mexico. It's not, in the clustered Southeast or Northeast or Midwest or anything like that. I bring that up only to say this game has technically been postponed at the moment. There is no decision been made if it will be made up. The return game at New Mexico State is still, as of this recording, scheduled for Saturday, December 3rd. Considering everything related to this, I don't know if it would be the worst idea if actually this rivalry got put on hold for a year, because this is beyond the pale, doesn't even begin to address what happened here. And yeah, I mean, it is a tragic story that seems like it could have been entirely avoided to begin with. And while, there have been some incidents in the past where something may have happened, like the most obvious one that doesn't even come close to this in terms of, damage done, was when Xavier and Cincinnati had the fight on the court.
Zip them up.
And then it was like, when should we play this game? How do we do this? Neutral court, not home courts. And so there was thought about but to me, that was always like, just continue playing the game as is. In the context of this season, not knowing if you can or should make up the first game, I might actually recommend pushing this back for at least a year, then reassessing and doing all that. Because apparently there was also, at a football game between these two universities earlier this year, a pretty significant melee broke out. And just the tempers need to really be cooled here. Remains to be seen if that will actually happen or not. You're also talking about non-conference inventory and team resumes. And I know that there's a lot of things that to take into consideration with this. But when you're talking about the literal murder of someone else,
not necessarily a murder, definitely a homicide.
That would be to an entirely different level where you need to strongly consider not playing these games, period, this season.
Yeah, and as it pertains to Mike Peake, like, obviously we hope that he recovers well and is released from the hospital soon. And again, I'm not interested in speculating. He hasn't been charged with a crime, and it's possible we'll find out this was a self-defense legal shooting. I don't know. But even the best version, I'll just say it plainly, a New Mexico State player traveled to a road game with a gun, I'm assuming broke curfew, and shot a person on New Mexico's campus. That's not great.
No.
Probably never plays again at New Mexico State.
Would have to think. Yeah, man, weird, unnecessary, completely avoidable story. But it happens, and it's tied to college sports. We're not going to dodge these stories when information is released, particularly in an official capacity by local authorities and some really good on the boots reporting from around that area.
Anything happy you want to end on?
Yeah, I mean, I got to go backstage and sit side stage at Dave Matthews Band Saturday.
I saw you. The podcast, you were like, I'm going to see Dave Matthews Band.
I wasn't
going
to jinx it.
But what it looked like is you didn't just go see it like 18,000 other people.
Yeah.
Deadleg was basically part of the band, part of the crew.
It was not the level of Guster. Wasn't Guster. I wasn't on stage. Guster, I was on stage. Guster, I was on stage for like 5-6 songs. Guster's For Lovers laptop out. March Madness banner across the table. That was outrageous and an unforgettable experience. This was more just was able to be afforded an opportunity to sit side stage. They put the cans on me just like this. So I was actually able to hear the mix. I was listening. So each band member gets a different mix. So I was listening to Dave's mix. So it was more drum heavy and instrument heavy, not as much in the low end with bass and stuff like that. And it was cool. The weirdest thing about it was because of where I was sitting, and I could have, I guess, avoided looking at the set list if I wanted to, but I actually knew the entire set. Like, that never happened. I knew the entire set list before they played it. And so I was all the more enthused because it was a really good set list and certainly a great final night. They had the entire horn section from Saturday Night Live. I guess SNL must not have been a live episode last night because the horn section for SNL was there and they sat in on a couple of songs, and it was a killer set list there. And yeah, really enjoyed it. And yeah, that was unforgettable experience there. So my thanks to Henry, who is DMB stage manager, and their crew for allowing me to kind of just sit there and absorb that. That was extremely cool.
You should have just said thanks to Dave for making that happen.
I did not. Oh, how about this? So there's a guy on the side. There are folks down kind of below in that area, just, VIPs, and they're not sitting with the hoi polloi, if you will. And there's a guy, and he's got this big old beard, and Carter Beauford's the drummer. And before Carter came out, like, he's getting ready to walk up the stage. But he kind of locks eyes with this guy, and they dap each other up. Hey man, how you doing? I'm like, how do I know this guy? I'm like, because he looks like a country music star. He's got a quasi Chris Stapleton kind of look to him, but he's not Stapleton. I know that. But he's big. I feel like this is a sports star. You're never gonna guess who it is. And all of a sudden it clicks with me. I'm like, dude, that's former New York Jet Nick Mangold. What the hell is he doing here? And how does he know the band so well? He was jamming the hell out. So shouts to Nick Mangold. He was having a great time. Nothing like the Garden, man. Have you ever seen a concert period of any kind at the Garden? Because it is the artists usually, when they play the Garden, it's a special thing. And more often than not, performances, no matter who's in the building, they really step it up there.
I was supposed to go to Rage and Run the Jewels at the Garden this past summer, but my flight got delayed, and so I didn't get there in time. So that's a no. I don't know that I've ever been to a show at the Garden. I'm thinking of it. I mean, I've been to a million things at the Garden. Does this count as a show? I went to the Yeezy season 2 or season 3 show at the Garden. And it
Does that count? Was that a show?
It was a fashion show, but also Kanye West. This is back before he became anti-Semitic. Yeah. So I was in the clear. If you notice, all my Kanye West stuff that used to be back here, it's gone.
Okay.
I didn't want anybody getting the wrong impression. But and he debuted the Life of Pablo album. And so he played the entire album. He was there. Pusha T was there. Travis Scott was there. Kim, the whole family. Kimmy K.
I'm kidding.
Kendall and Kylie, they were all there. They set one section over for me. And it was like, you know, it wasn't a traditional concert, but it was a thing. It was a music thing at the Garden.
Even it, I'd say that might qualify. I'd say that's pretty close to qualifying. Someone in the chat asked if he opened with Satellite. We don't root for Satellite shows, and no, he did not open, nor did he play it. So there we go.
You don't like Satellite.
It's fine. Wouldn't be in my top 50. Come on now.
I have no opinion on that.
I know.
Are we ready to go?
Let's go.
It's a Sunday night. Are your kids out of school tomorrow?
Dude, they're not scheduled to be out of school, but the sickness, I might be waking up to two kids at home.
You think they're sick?
Think.
They're definitely sick.
There's no thinking about it, especially the older one. Definitely sick. Definitely sick. By the way, Houston up 53-40. Cougars. Cougars, man. What did I tell you? Oh, this is dangerous doing this live. Anything could happen. I'm not picking against them until they don't cover the spread. Here we go. What was the line? 5? Let's go.
Well, suddenly, you know, we had talked about this in the offseason. I mentioned Houston could be the last team that's undefeated, and I still think that might be true. But there's a massive game now. Let me make sure I got the date right. 12-17, December 17th.
Virginia.
Houston at Virginia. Should be great now.
I brought that up on the pod. That's why I didn't pick them.
All right. My kids are both out of school. I don't remember being out of school the entire week of Thanksgiving when I was a kid. Is that a new thing?
It might be a Mississippi thing. I don't know.
Maybe it's, yeah. I think we've just given up down here. It's just like, you know what? We're going to finish 50th no matter what. Let's have fun. Let's take off the whole week of Thanksgiving. We're going to finish 50th in literacy and everything else. So let's just take off the whole week of Thanksgiving. Maybe that's the approach.
Dude, side note. We can get out of here. We're rolling way too late. But I do this confidence pool. You know what a confidence pool is? Pick NFL confidence pool.
Sure.
Pick each game, but you assign a value to it. So if there's 14 weeks, one game's got a 14, 13, 12. I had the Chargers at like a 8 confidence I would have won. I'm looking here and I just see the Chiefs score 2 minutes to go. What am I doing picking against Patrick Mahomes?
What is the score?
I'm on stream, so I'm probably about 60 to 70 seconds behind the actual live feeds. 30, 27, 31 seconds to go. So Justin Herbert seems capable of throwing the ball 75 yards, so I guess nothing's done yet. But what am I doing? Would have had it. I had a clear lead. Now I'm going to lose it. No one cares.
No one cares.
No one cares.
Shouts to Devin Downey. Shouts to Chester, South Carolina. Shouts to Hawk. Shouts to Larnell. Thank you guys once again for listening to the Island College Basketball Podcast. If you're not subscribed, please go subscribe anywhere you subscribe to podcasts, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify. 5 stars, nice review. There's more of us than there are of them. And we're going to talk to you again real, real soon. Till then, take care.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and 3-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.